This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The problem of sex trafficking in South Texas is insidious. It's everywhere, yet to most of us, it's invisible. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of young men and women being forced to work in the sex industry. They are victims of modern-day slavery. There's a panel tonight at St. Mary's University discussing human trafficking, 5 to 6:30 p.m., free and open to the public. What questions or comments do you have about the problem of sex trafficking here in South Texas? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by James Greenaway. He is a Charles Miller Chair in the Human Dignity at St. Mary's University, and Chuck Paul. He's a domestic minor sex trafficking consultant. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all. It's great to have you here. So, James Greenaway, tell me about the panel that you're having tonight.
Okay. So, well, first of all, just the role that I play. I am the holder of the Charles H. Miller Chair in Human Dignity in St. Mary's. And I've been working on a couple of different initiatives since I was given the chair. And one of them is working in some of our state prisons, teaching a philosophy course in human dignity, because I am a philosophy professor. I'm coming towards the end of my term as chair, and I wanted to do one other event, have one other initiative. And it seemed to be glaringly obvious to me that here is a very, very big problem that nobody's talking about. And I just thought that it would be a very good thing to bring together some experts in the field to share with us what they know. And maybe, you know, like as you said in your introduction, maybe to sort of bring out into the open a lot of these people who seem to be hidden in plain view, a lot of people who are enslaved, they're all around us. San Antonio is a hub. The market is here. These people are here, and we don't see them.
Why don't we see them? How can this be invisible, Chuck Paul?
Well, one of the reasons why we don't see them is because we don't know what to look for. And that is because of the fact that a lot of times we're going about our lives, we're engrossed in what's going on, what we have happening, we're thinking about the next thing we have to do, and we run across those people. You know, you've seen those people. You know, the person that's sitting at the bar, they're at the hotel bar, and they seem to be by themselves. Well, suddenly someone comes up and meets with them, and then they take off. And then a few hours later, you see that same person, and they're hanging out at the bar. And if you really look closely, I mean really look closely, you notice that they have clothing that just doesn't seem to fit right, but it's very hypersexualized. It's showing off a lot of skin. Maybe they look a little bit younger. Maybe they seem to have makeup that on that's inappropriately applied, but you don't notice a purse, or you don't notice a bag. You don't notice anything that you'd normally see in a hotel room. And they seem to be meeting up with different people that they just don't seem to match with, because their dress, their style of dress is different. Their clothing, the quality of clothing doesn't match up. And you think to yourself, well, I wonder what they're here doing. And then maybe even sometimes some people that have a little bit more opinionated may say, oh, they're just a prostitute. And we like to throw that word prostitute around a lot, but we don't think about the ramifications of what exactly it was that brought this person into it. The majority of prostitutes are people that are not getting any profit out of this. These are people that are being forced to do this for the profit of another person, and that's human trafficking.
Let me go to the phone line. So we have Carol has called in. And I understand that you were a victim. You were brought into human trafficking. How did that happen?
Well, that's a really, really long story. But basically, it was a couple that I had met. They gave me a place to stay. They provided me with food and clothing. It started off really nice. Basically, they took care of all my needs, but later on, I found that there was kind of a hidden agenda. So they started off with parties, sometimes swinger parties, and I noticed I would start feeling different after a while. I noticed that when we'd be drinking, that it tasted bitter. So it was started off with that. I think they were spiking my drinks, and I would kind of black out. So over time.
And how old were you at this time?
At this time, 18.
And were you a 18. Runaway, or how did you come in contact with them?
Yeah, I was a runaway, and then eventually I turned, 18, and I was able to leave the house. But I was 18.
Okay, and so then you've noticed that they were possibly drugging you. Is that what happened?
Yeah, yes, they were drugging me, and I would wake up, with different men, and that's how it basically all started. That's how it started.
And then they did what? How did you move into the next phase?
Well, that was the very beginning. That was 20 years ago. So then I ended up getting with a guy that I thought I loved. I had daddy issues. That I thought I loved. He was an ex-con, did 13 years in the penitentiary, and he had a really bad cocaine addiction. I had already kind of had issues from my childhood. I had issues from the couple. I kind of was masking my feelings, and I started using with him. I didn't really want to use, but I wanted to be like on the same level as him. I wanted him to accept me, uh-huh. And he would tell me he understood me, and I became addicted to crack cocaine at that time with him.
And then did he begin to push you into with other, yes. Other men?
Yes. Actually, it got really bad. He lived on the west side, and he showed me basically the ropes. It was a couple of blocks from Guadalupe Street. And he told me, if you love me, if you care about me, if you want me to feel better, you'll go out there and you'll make, you'll make the money that I need to get high. So I was very hesitant. In the beginning, he was kind of just like asking me for a favor, please, please, please. But it got to a point where he would tell me, if you don't do it, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to kill you, those kind of things. And there were several times where he beat me senseless. He dragged me down 3 flights of stairs. I mean, it got really bad.
And so it got to a point where you were arrested and for prostitution, and you were in jail. And yeah. I understand that Sheriff Pomerleau came to you and offered you a way out. I want to hear about that, about where you were mentally. I got to take this break here. And so I want to hear more about that story and about how you were offered a way out and how you were able to take it and how difficult that was for you. Your story is really, really important, Carol, because we're going to raise people's awareness. This can happen to anyone. A couple of bad decisions, and before you know it, you think you're trapped, and how people need to know what the options are. And our phone lines are also open for other folks to call in with questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about human trafficking, sex trafficking in San Antonio. With me on the line is Carol. And I know, Carol, I only have you for a couple more minutes, but you were telling us about your life when you were a victim of human trafficking. You found yourself in the Bexar County Jail, arrested for prostitution, and you had an encounter with a former Sheriff Pomerleau. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, I came to a point where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I don't know if she saw it on my face or what, because there was a whole line of us, and she was in her flip-flops. There must have been a riot or something in the jail, and she had to come after hours. And she stopped at me, and well, first she kind of passed me by, and then she kind of like did a little double take, and she backed up, and she said, "Excuse me, do you mind me asking why you're here?" And I said, "A prostitution." And she's like, "Really?" Like, kind of like, stunned. "Well, while you're in my jail, you're going to get the help that you need." And that right there, she planted a seed of hope, and like, it just, It was almost like an epiphany, like an awakening, like somebody believed in me and somebody believed I could do it, you know, because I went through 20 years of this, 20 years of human trafficking and addiction to hard drugs. And so I was like, wow. And then I got to the women's jail across the street, and it happened again. I had one of the chief probation ladies, well, one of the directors maybe, and she was interviewing me for the Esperanza court, and I had told her that I wasn't qualified the first time, and she's like, have you ever been raped? And I said, as a matter of fact, many times. And yes, you can rape a prostitute, just so people know. She's like, well, I'm a rape victim as well. She gave me her card, and she told me that she was going to offer the, you know, ask the judge if they could give me this program. And just those ladies right there, you know, inspiring me and believing in me, you know, that's all I needed at that time. That was it.
Carol, what message do you have for other people out there? What do you want them to know about sex trafficking here in San Antonio?
Okay, so this is it, in a nutshell. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what sex you are, whether you're gay, lesbian, straight. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. It does not discriminate against social class. You could be poor or you could have money. You know, it happens right here in the Dominion. You know, parents need to be more proactive with kids having access to the internet. You know, talk to your kids, you know, college students, college girls, you know, the guys come in and they kind of make it seem like, you know, it's kind of like this glamorous lifestyle and you know, they're struggling. Most of them college students. So they're like, you know, they think that it's fun or it's, you know, it'll be temporary and it's such a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous world. And, you know, there just needs to be more awareness. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, they had the DARE programs. They had the Stranger Danger. You know, they should have in schools. I know it's a touchy subject, but I think that, you know, it should be just as common as all those other things because it's real. And your life is on the line.
Carol, thank you so much. I'm so glad that you're doing better now and you're out of that world and that you're alive, which many people who have been caught in that world, they took a fatal turn. Carol, thank you so much for your call. So let me go to Chuck Paul, and he's an expert in this area. He's a sex trafficking consultant helping police and families find out what's going on in this area. So you heard Carol's story, Chuck. And there's a lot of stuff there, but we see the Romeo to pimp pathway, you know, we'll talk about that.
So what she described was the three phases of human sex trafficking here in the United States, and that is the Romeo to daddy to gorilla phase. And Romeo phase is a person's not just going to come up and for the most part and grab you up and say, I'm going to make you my sex slave. Most people are going to reject that. If someone gets online and says, okay, I need you to come see me so I can make you my sex slave, they're going to reject that. But the Romeo phase is he's a protector and he's a promiser. He's going to promise and to provide everything you need. He's going to promise to protect you. He's going to promise to take you away and make this beautiful life. He's going to pretend to love you. He's going to pretend that you're the most important person in the world. And for a lot of times, the victims that they look for that either that child online that's angry at mom and dad and feels unloved and unwanted. They look for that individual that's struggling in life and feels like they have no resources. And they come in and they lie that they're going to provide all of these things and they're going to be the savior of this person. And this person is just literally looking for a lifeline. And that's called the Romeo phase. And that's the phase where I'm going to get you to fall in love with me. I'm a bad guy. I'm going to get you to care for me. I'm going to get you to finally feel like you're getting your needs met. But in the meantime, I'm also going to introduce narcotics use to you because that's another resource that you don't have that I'm going to be able to provide. And once I have you in that phase, then I'm going to move to daddy phase. And daddy phase is I have separated you out from all other connections in your life. You can't go to your mom. You can't go to your dad.
Taking your cell phone.
Right.
Taking your IDs.
I'm controlling everything about your life. But I'm doing it out of love because I'm your protector. But there's that underlying threat of violence. I'm needing you to help me out at this phase because I owe somebody money or I have a drug addiction or you know how much I mean to you and how much you mean to me. You've got to help me out, how much money I spent being your Romeo, being your provider. You've got to help me out because I love you and I care for you. And that might happen one time, and it's always, it's only this one time. It's only this next time. It's only one more time. But about the third or fourth time, that's when the full daddy face comes out and it says, listen, you know you did this. I need you to do it again, and you're going to do it a lot more. And you're going to do this stripping, and you're going to do this escort service, and you're going to do this pornography, and you're going to do it because you love your daddy, because you're an extension of who I am. If you say you don't want to do it, that means you're denying who I am. And not only that, but that means everybody else is going to find out what you already did, because I'm the only person that can love you knowing that you already slept with these other guys for me. And if anybody else found out about that, they'd call you a whore. And now you belong to me, and your will is no longer your will, but you are an extension of who I am. Because now you're addicted to drugs. You're addicted to the resources. You're trauma bonded with the trafficker, what we used to call Stockholm Syndrome. You're trauma bonded because it's a system of reward and punishment. But if eventually you're going to act out and you're going to say, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that's when the gorilla phase comes in. And the gorilla phase is, you will do this because I am the punisher now. And
right.
If you don't do what I tell you to do, I will hurt you. I will hurt your family. I know where your little sister lives. I know where your mom lives. I know where your little brother lives. And I will hurt you. And I will hurt them. And it's either going to be you or them. Which one is it going to be?
James Greenaway, over at St. Mary's University, you're having this panel tonight. We were talking about this. But you work on a campus, a college campus, with a lot of young people.
Right.
And that's a place where some people who are trying to recruit people into sex trafficking, that's where they're going to go to try and find.
So do
you feel that we need to do more to make young people aware that we have professional individuals who know how to manipulate them and draw them into this mm-hmm. world?
Yeah. Well, I think with a lot of different sort of social movements that are going on at the moment, I think we're all tuning into, you know, abuses that are there. They're probably a lot more common than people are aware of. But they're coming to the fore now. And, you know, when I talk to my students, you know, I think a lot of them are, you know, quite naive. And that's a real problem. So it's about, you know, giving them the sort of information that they need to not be vulnerable. And it's also about recognizing that there are probably a lot of people, a lot of students and others involved on our university campuses that may have already been touched by this in different ways. And so to have somebody like, you know, Chuck come and tell us what he knows, and also importantly to have somebody like Carol come and she calls herself a survivor and she speaks a message of hope. And so I think that it's incredibly important that, you know, we get the facts and we also get a human face that says, here's what can happen. And she can offer hope. So,
Chuck Paul, we have the Final Four coming up to San Antonio pretty soon. It's a big sporting event. We know that when you have these major national sporting events come in, people will bring in individuals like a pimp will bring in his stable of victims with him. What can people keep an eye out for if they see something like that?
So if you run across a trafficker with their stable, first thing you're going to realize is that they're going to travel together. They're going to hang out together. So say you're at a hotel. You're here for the event. You're at a hotel. There's a room there at the hotel, and it seems to have several individuals staying in it. They're going in and out at all weird hours. And it seems as though that one person is controlling of what everybody else says and all their contact. And whenever anybody else in that room is asked a question or potentially going to come in contact with a hotel staff or a guest, they're always looking back to one person to answer that question. That's where you're going to have that stable staying at a hotel. Now let's flip that over. Let's say you have a victim being brought into a hotel. You're going to see this person is going to be very timid, very shy. If you do communicate with them, they're going to have a rehearsed story. But for the most part, like I talked about, the hypersexualized clothing, very little material items, going into a room at all hours of the day and night. And for hotel staff particularly, one of the things that I have to emphasize for hotel staff, if you have a trafficking victim being brought in, a lot of times trafficking victims are being go from one date to the next. So it's very common for the Johns, the sex buyers, the first thing they ask the victim to do, or they have the victim do, is they have them shower. So if you're a hotel staff and you're suddenly getting an individual that has guests visiting late at night, and every time they do, you're having to order more towels, because they're definitely not going to use the towels that the victim just used in the middle of the night. And then, of course, if that person leaves, you probably got a person that's buying sex up in that room.
So there are identifiable things that aren't happening, warning signs, red flags. Are the police connecting those things? Is there some sort of line of communication that needs to be set up?
Well, between the hotel staff and law enforcement here in San Antonio, there has been some training and some connections. San Antonio Police Department Special Victims Unit has officers, detectives that are specially trained how to respond to human trafficking cases. And they work with our local law enforcement, both on the state and federal level. It's getting that information down to the local patrol officer. And a lot of times the problem that we run into is that when people do call the police, they say, I have something weird going on, or just something real suspicious. And they don't articulate. They don't use the word trafficking. I'm looking at trafficking. I believe the person in the next room is being trafficked. That key word gets that dispatcher to dispatch officers, who then begin taking the information they know they need to get back to the San Antonio Police Department Special Victims Unit. Because that officer may not know all the red flags, but that detective will.
James Greenaway, when you started saying we need to look at this issue, have you had an awakening? Did you realize what you were getting into here?
Well, I suppose the scale of it, and just listening to Chuck talk and hearing all the terminology and all of that, I mean, that's just eye-opening to me, and I'd imagine it is for your audience as well. But, you know, I suppose, you know, when you come from Northern Ireland, which I do, you're also very aware of, you know, how, you know, dominating others and depersonalizing others and violating the dignity of other people is a real possibility. And it's a possibility of any one of us. Like, we all have to think about ourselves. We have to think about how we commodify others and we refuse to see their personhood. So, you know, it's surprising in one way, and in another way, it just affirms a kind of a sad truth about what human beings can be.
And Chuck Paul, when it say that prostitution is a victimless crime, what do you think about that?
Prostitution is not a victimless crime. It's simply by the fact that most prostitutes did not. As a matter of fact, I've never talked to any prostitute or sex worker, stripper, prostitute, adult model, whatever you call it. I've never talked to one of them that dreamed of being a sex worker or a prostitute when they grew up. They all dreamed of being doctors and lawyers and firemen and teachers and princes and princesses and the heroes of their own story. None of them wanted to have someone pay to rape them. And that's what's happening. Because the individuals that pay to engage with prostitution, as we call it, they're not buying standardized romantic affairs like we see in movies. No, they're looking to act out sexual fantasies that they saw in pornography. Aggressive, violent sexual fantasies.
All right, we're going to have more conversations about this topic. Unfortunately, we got to wrap this one up today. I want to thank both of our guests, James Greenaway. He is the professor of human dignity at St. Mary's University, and Chuck Paul, a domestic minor sex trafficking consultant. And you have an event tonight at St. Mary's University on human trafficking, 5 to 6:30 p.m., free and open to the public. Source continues after this break. Stay tuned.